This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents The Magic of Meditation. Stories and practices to develop gratitude and empathy with your child. By Marie-Christine Champeau-Cunin and Dominique Boutet. Translated by Cherub Chudzin-Cohn. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell. Foreword. The idea of introducing periods of meditation into the school curriculum generally arouses uneasiness and apprehension in both parents and teachers. But if you offer these same people a secular program based on reliable scientific studies that improves attention, emotional balance, and personal relations among students, they welcome it with open arms. Programs based on meditation, or to use a less culturally loaded expression, mind training, have been in place in England, the Netherlands, the United States, Canada, Australia, and a number of other countries for quite a few years now, to the benefit of a large number of students. A growing number of children are suffering from problems with attention, emotional disorders, and relationship difficulties. And the average age of the first appearance of depression has gone down from 27 to 15 over the last 25 years. In this challenging environment, meditation offers a way to strengthen the psychological immune system in the same way physical exercise strengthens the physical immune system. In school, we teach children a variety of disciplines, how to pass a test, and how to succeed. All important, no doubt. But if we ask parents what they want the most for their children, most of them will reply with words such as happiness, self-confidence, joy, kindness, health, love, and a meaningful life. Beyond reading, writing, and arithmetic, schools have the opportunity to teach children how to become better human beings. Marie-Christine Champeau-Cumin and Dominique Boutet's Magic of Meditation provides a welcome introduction to meditation to both parents and children. The authors clearly explain what meditation is, a way of training the mind, and what it is not, a mere exercise in relaxation and a vain attempt to empty the mind. The first two parts of the book explain what meditation is for parents and children. The third part illustrates the practice of meditation in the form of stories for children. It is important for us to understand that the goal of meditation is not to impose an artificial way of thinking on children. Instead, the practice helps them to bring out the best in themselves, fostering their natural inclination toward cooperation and altruism. Very early in life, even as babies, we show a preference for people who behave kindly toward others over people who treat others with hostility. At Yale University, Paul Bloom's researchers showed a video to children between the ages of 6 and 10 months in which a ball with large eyes is having trouble getting up a steep incline. A second ball enters the scene and helps the first one by pushing it from behind. Then a third ball comes along and gives the first ball a downward push, causing it to tumble all the way back down to the bottom of the incline. The babies were then offered two balls, one resembling the second and one resembling the third. 9 out of 10 of the babies reached out toward the second ball, the one that had been kind and helpful. In Vancouver, a group of psychologists demonstrated that 2-year-old children were happier when they gave a treat to somebody else than when they received one. At the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, Michael Tomasello and Felix Warnikin established that children at the age of 1, at a time when they are still barely learning to walk and talk, already demonstrate behaviors of mutual aid and cooperation without having learned them from an adult. And being rewarded didn't necessarily serve as motivation. In fact, those who were rewarded were less helpful than those who received nothing. Programs for cultivating attention and kindness by means of meditation have already demonstrated their value. Examples include the compassion training introduced at the preschool level in Madison, Wisconsin, by the team of neuroscientist Richard Davidson and the Program of Cognitive Therapy based on compassion for children living in foster homes, founded by psychiatrist Chuck Rezan at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. We can also point to Neil Hawkes' values-based education program in England and programs for the development of emotional intelligence in place in hundreds of schools throughout the world. Education is an opportunity to nurture and strengthen children's natural inclination toward empathy and altruism. An enlightened education emphasizes the interdependence that exists among human beings, animals, and our natural environment, and encourages children to choose cooperation over competition and active concern over indifference. In this way, children can grow up with a holistic view of the world that surrounds them and naturally make positive contributions to their communities. I am quite confident that reading about the magic breath of Yupsi the Little Dragon and learning to practically apply the lessons contained in the stories will provide precious tools for an education that, to paraphrase Aristophanes, does not consist only of filling the vase, but also in lighting a flame in it. The flame here is the joy of living and learning, for our own good and for that of society. Matthieu Ricard. Introduction. Being a parent in the 21st century certainly can be a challenge. The world around us is changing so fast that sometimes we feel it is leaving us behind, and the subject of education can be a confusing one. We want education to bring our children happiness and success, and we also want education to prepare them for society's lightning speed changes and the stress that these changes can bring on. Dealing with the speed of change is one of the great challenges of our time. New research has shown that the introduction of meditation, starting at the preschool level, has a profound effect on the education of our children. Our book about Yupsi the Little Dragon is inspired by this research and presents a method for practicing meditation with your young child starting as early as the age of 3. You don't have to be somebody who frequents a yoga studio, martial arts dojo, or meditation hall to give this adventure a try. The practices selected for this book are all entirely secular in nature and can be used independently of any philosophical or religious belief. In part 1, you will find a brief, simple introduction to meditation that will give you an understanding of the basics and benefits of the practice. In part 2, we will talk about the benefits of meditation for your child in terms of health, managing emotions, and success in school. In part 3, we will introduce you and your child to Yupsi the Little Dragon. The stories will compassionately guide your child through the dragon's magic breath to help find calm and work through difficult emotions. Yupsi will help your child find an inner sense of security that will accompany her, like Yupsi, all through her life. Introducing your child to meditation is like planting a seed for the future. What sprouts up will, of course, depend on her personality, but also on how you share these special moments with her. We believe that with consistency and perseverance, every child is capable of getting it. It will then fall to you to observe the results and to decide whether the experiment is worth continuing with or not. This audiobook comes with an additional audio component that includes the Yupsi song, as well as recordings of the meditations and stories. The audio is available for download at www.shambhala.com/magicofmeditation. Giving your child the opportunity to meditate from a very early age and to practice with him is one of the most wonderful gifts you can give him. We wish you wonderful adventures with your child in the company of Yupsi the Little Dragon and his magic breath. Part 1. Introduction to Meditation. In today's busy and agitated world, many parents have heard about meditation But few are actually well informed about the positive effects it can have on their children. In this part of the book, we will define meditation and elaborate on its many benefits. Then we will provide basic instructions on teaching your children how to meditate, give tips on guiding them through this new experience, and share four basic meditative practices. 1. What is meditation? The meaning of the word meditation can be different depending on the context. Are we talking about the East or the West? About simply achieving well-being or a spiritual quest? Two friends were having lunch together. One asked the other, "So, you meditate?" The other replied, "Sure, I just signed up for a course. And you? Have you finally started?" "Oh, yes," replied the first. "I started a while ago. It's doing me a tremendous amount of good." Now, if we look a little deeper, we would find that these two friends weren't actually talking about the same thing. One of them was taking a yoga class, and the other was practicing relaxation techniques from an app she just downloaded. In reality, neither one of them had begun to practice meditation. Another view is that meditation is all about sitting on a cushion and emptying your head of thoughts. But in actuality, the flow of thoughts cannot be controlled easily. In the following sections, we'll look at the complex and various ways meditation can be used so that you can best guide your child as she begins to practice. The Eastern Origins of Meditation. We find the first written evidence of meditation in the ancient Indian texts called the Vedas, dating back to about 1400 BCE. Some scholars believe that meditation was being practiced well before that. In the Vedas, meditation took the form of mantras, Sanskrit formulas that were to be repeated over and over again. The word mantra in Sanskrit means mind protecting. Mantra recitation was an integral part of yoga, which comes from the Sanskrit word yog, which means to bind, unite. Uniting the body, heart, and mind. In the first millennium BCE, Brahmanism and Jainism influenced the practice of meditation in India. And in the 6th century BCE, meditation became a fundamental part of Taoism in China and Buddhism in India. In Buddhism, we learn that meditation comes from the Sanskrit term bhavana, which means take care of, cultivate, and from the Tibetan term gom, which means familiarize oneself with. Meditation serves to cultivate the mind by revealing its hidden qualities. Matthieu Ricard defines meditation as a tool that serves to make us better people and put our good qualities at the service of others. It is a practice that allows us to actualize the potential that lies within us. It is a training of the mind that brings about alertness, kindness, and compassion. It is a path that leads to inner freedom and knowledge of the ultimate reality of things. This means a Buddhist person seeks to acquire true knowledge of herself and of the functioning of her mind. Through the practice of meditation, she becomes aware of her inner potential and pays close attention to her own behavior and that of those around her. Meditation is a long-term progressive effort with a new state of mind gradually settling in. The ultimate goal of meditation is to help ourselves and others to become liberated from the causes of suffering and to achieve true happiness. In Buddhism, it is thought that those who bring genuine love, kindness, and understanding to people around them will receive the direct benefits of their actions in this life or the next. The many meditative paths of the West. While most Westerners immediately associate meditation with Eastern religions, it was also used by ancient Greek philosophers and Christians in the Middle Ages as a contemplative practice. The word meditation comes from the Greek word meleti, which means training or exercise. It was transcribed in Latin as meditatio, which means more or less to pay attention to an object of thought. From the beginning of the 5th century BCE, meditation occupied a key spot in philosophical debate. Socrates, who is considered the father of Western philosophy, focused his attention on the nature of being human. He inquired into the knowledge of self, the nature of truth and beauty, and the notions of good, immortality, and the soul. To Socrates, being a philosopher meant being able to withdraw into the deepest level of oneself, principally by means of meditation. Socrates was followed by Aristotle, founder of the Peripatetic school of the Lyceum, situated on a walkway, peripatos, where the master taught as he walked back and forth. In his Nicomachean Ethics, Aristotle distinguished three types of happiness: pleasure, politics, and meditation. Only the last of these found favor in his eyes because only the contemplative life can bring contentment to the wise man and permit him to live according to reason and in harmony with the nature of man and that of the universe. A half century later, the philosopher Epicurus proposed another more therapeutic kind of meditation, using techniques for overcoming pain. Among the founding fathers of the Church, the theologians who established Christian doctrine following the apostles were mainly concerned with unifying the body, soul, and mind. This kind of reflection enabled the Eastern Christian tradition to develop powerful tools of concentration and relaxation. The prayer of the heart, or hesychasm, which comes from the Greek hesukia, meaning tranquility or silence, is still practiced today by the monks of Mount Athos, and this practice represents the fundamental spiritual path of the Greek Orthodox Church. In the Roman Church, it is silent prayer, in which the faithful attempt to create silence in themselves in order to open themselves to God. That is the principal method. In the 16th century, St. Ignatius Loyola, founder of the Society of Jesus, offered spiritual exercises in his book of the same name that are still in use today. In Judaism, ecstatic Kabbalah and other branches emphasize meditation based on the letters of the Torah and the 72 names of God. Sufi meditation draws its inspiration from the Quran. It encourages introspection, and its contemplative practices involve intensive invocation of the names of Allah. Meditation in the West today. A current of secular meditation has been steadily gaining force over the past few decades. Meditation is now recommended by psychotherapists and is unreservedly associated with therapeutic benefits. In the 1980s, Jon Kabat-Zinn, a professor of medicine, introduced a program called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, MBSR, or mindfulness for short. Kabat-Zinn's program integrated therapeutic techniques from meditation for the purpose of dealing with stress, anxiety, and illness. The first clinic for stress reduction was founded at the University of Massachusetts Medical School, where the medically oriented Center for Mindfulness also was started. Today, more than 5,000 doctors across the world rely on Kabat-Zinn's work in their practices. Modern-day mindfulness programs are situated at the crossroads between two seemingly opposing worlds. On one side, there is the Eastern philosophical tradition with its Buddhist meditation practices, and on the other side, the world of Western scientific research in the fields of psychology and neuroscience. The exercises used in secular mindfulness programs are derived from the mind-training disciplines of Tibetan Buddhism. But the objectives are rather different. The goal of mindfulness is a therapeutic one. In general, to make the body feel better or find relief from emotional problems. This practice is focused around ourselves. In fact, We often speak of it in terms of personal development, making this approach somewhat limited. By contrast, the primary motivation of Buddhist meditation is to transform oneself in order to become capable of altruistic love and feel compassion for others. 2. Why meditate? Many of us are unsatisfied with our lives. Our daily existence is filled with activities, but they aren't what we need to really feel happy. When, by chance, we experience moments of inner peace, we find that they pass all too quickly. Our worries are soon gnawing at us again. We might think that endless worrying is inevitable and that it is impossible to change this state of affairs in any way. Our sense of inescapable discontent causes suffering, and we might even take our pain out on other people. It is possible to remedy this kind of suffering by training our minds. For lasting benefits, a regular daily meditation practice is essential. What benefits might we expect? Creating space around our thoughts. When you first start to meditate, even after practicing for several days, the beneficial effects might be hard to see. But don't be discouraged. It is easier to see the results of athletic training after just a few sessions. A runner can see them by looking at his chronometer. The figure skater will successfully complete her triple leap. In meditation, which is also training but of the mind, the effects are less tangible. But the mechanism is still the same. You need to have a basic minimum of interest in and enthusiasm for the exercise. In this case, being mindful and willing to make the efforts necessary to get to the goal. The limitations of the mind are no different from those of the body. Depending on how regular you are with the practice, your way of seeing things will change, and your mind will become more peaceful and less prone to confusion. You will create a distance between yourself and the daily situations you face, whether they are pleasant, annoying, or even very difficult. Meditation will not prevent you from acting. Rather, you will act in a calmer, more controlled, and mindful way. Meditation allows you to develop inner space, so you can pause before reacting, a saving grace that can increase your confidence. You will no longer fear situations getting out of control and carrying you away. You will have the crucial time needed to find the right words to respond. For example, disciplining a child will include firmness, but also love rather than impatience and exasperation. And at work, a small moment of reflection can save you many an impulsive blunder. Learning to observe. Each time you finish with an exercise in mind training, get into the habit of observing the effects it has had on your mind. How are you feeling? Are you calmer? Little by little, you will start to experience encouraging shifts. Some benefits of a more spacious mind. By developing a regular practice, you can become more creative, patient, confident, able to observe your thoughts and emotions, productive, tolerant, relaxed and balanced, attentive to others, in the here and now. Taming disturbing emotions. Meditation versus relaxation. It's a beautiful sunny afternoon, and we're in a meditation workshop. Our goal is to attain mental calm. Everyone is at work concentrating on the coming and going of the breath. Bellies are swelling, and the breath is rising to the head. Distracting thoughts are coming up, but they aren't being grasped. There is no way anyone is going to launch into an extensive inner dialogue. The thoughts are like fish. They jump out of the river, but they fall right back in. Everyone exhales gently, and bellies fall. The exercise lasts half an hour. There's a feeling of tranquility. And some people experience a kind of joy. Peace prevails in the large hall. At the end, one of the participants heaves a huge sigh of satisfaction and says, "Wow, that was really terrific. That forest air is so fresh. That deep breathing completely aerated my brain. I feel totally relaxed." But if this participant thinks he has been meditating, he has gotten relaxation and meditation mixed up. Deep relaxation brings a feeling of well-being in the moment. Practiced regularly, it can even bring a sense of self-improvement. It lessens the worst effects of negative emotions, protects our health, and makes suffering easier to bear. But meditation takes us further. The goal of meditation is to bring out our potential and transform us into kinder people with more concern for others. Without a doubt, this requires regular practice over a long period of time. But ultimately, meditation enables us to tame our negative emotions. Finding proof from neuroscience. The physical configuration of the brain is not rigidly fixed. Scientific research in the field of neuroplasticity has confirmed that the mind training effects of meditation can shift the wiring of our brains. This means that it is entirely possible to change our way of seeing things. We have a choice. Should we continue to live the way we do today? Or should we try to transform ourselves? It is up to each of us to decide. A study by Richard Davidson at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, published in 2004, demonstrates the effect of meditation on the management of destructive emotions. The meditators tested in this first study, all from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, had each meditated a total of between 10,000 and 50,000 hours. As the subjects were meditating on compassion, a remarkable increase in rapid oscillations in the gamma frequencies was observed, of a magnitude never before recorded in the literature of the neurosciences, wrote Davidson. This seems to show clearly that the brain can be trained and physically modified in a way that few people could have imagined. Studies of this sort have enabled us to discover, or I should say, rediscover, how much the millennia-old practice of meditation can help us face the challenges of our own times. An emerging discipline known as social neuroscience has shown that our relationships with others have an unexpected significance. Daniel Goleman, in his book Social Intelligence, stresses that wise action entails a more expanded view that leads us to consider within the scope of social intelligence capacities that enrich personal relationships, like empathy and concern. The implications of these discoveries compel us to reevaluate how we live our lives. We could best respond to Goleman's call by practicing meditation for opening the heart, compassion, tolerance, and altruism in our lives. Working with anger. An overworked woman forgot to pick up her husband's suit at the cleaner, which she promised she would take care of. That evening, anger exploded in the house. The husband was furious. He was due to leave for a conference in a foreign city, and he needed this suit. His plane was leaving first thing in the morning. His wife came back at him with all barrels blazing. She was thoroughly provoked and got right into his anger. Voices got louder and harsh words were said, becoming increasingly violent, completely beyond reason. Words can have an irreversible effect on our relationships. As Daniel Goleman put it, "When someone dumps their toxic feelings on us, explodes in anger or threats, shows disgust or contempt, they activate in us circuitry for those very same distressing emotions. Their act has potent neurological consequences. Emotions are contagious. We catch strong emotions much as we do a rhinovirus, and so can come down with the emotional equivalent of a cold." rather than responding to the other person in an uncontrolled, immediate way? Why not try to practice compassion and tolerance? Let's make use of the inner space that our meditation practice has opened up for us. It is impossible for us to control the other person, but we can control our own reactions. We can take the time to contemplate our own anger in order to put out the fire of the argument and not let ourselves get carried away. We could evoke feelings of tolerance and allow that the other person might also have had a hard day. We will have a better chance to curb our anger if we do the meditations we've shared in the next chapter for a few minutes every day. At this point in the audiobook, some of you might be thinking, is that it? That's just plain common sense. It's obvious. But in reality, there is a huge gap between theory and practice. As the psychoanalyst Nicole Fabre often says, you don't become a good cook just by reading a cookbook, and you don't get to be a psychoanalyst just by reading all the books on psychoanalysis. Only by going through diligent, practical mind training can we really learn to behave in a compassionate and tolerant way. Managing jealousy. Jealousy is one of the most difficult emotional reactions. No one wants to experience it, as it dooms us to chronic discontent and suffering. The following remedies for jealousy might seem simplistic, but they are extremely effective. When we meet someone more fortunate, don't be jealous. Rather, be happy for him. When someone does something good, rejoice rather than be critical. When someone is happy, rejoice again. If she is successful, so much the better. Putting this into practice may be difficult, but with a little mind training, it is completely possible. Giving up the desire to be better than everybody else is a good place to start. Dealing with stress and anxiety. Hans Selye, who completed his medical studies at the University of Montreal in the 1920s, was the first to use the word stress in its current application. Selye noticed that all his patients, no matter what their ailments were, had one thing in common. They all gave the impression of being sick. As Selye saw it, they were all suffering from physical stress resulting from their illness. He determined that stress is the reaction of an organism that feels threatened. In small doses, it can be beneficial and provide the energy needed to deal with the challenges of daily life. But if stress is always there, it can have long-term negative health effects. Stress can be found everywhere, at work, at home, in a marriage, or in the aftermath of a traumatic event. In times of stress, everything goes wrong. We are at a loss as to how to get out of it, and as a result, anxiety begins to take over. To detect stress in advance, keep an eye out for these warning signs. You constantly feel overwhelmed. You consistently react negatively to situations. You overreact to the causes of stress. The best way to calm our stressed-out minds is to do 20 minutes of meditation every day, preferably working with the breath. Refer to the meditations proposed in the next chapter. When you are suffering from stress, you may not particularly feel like meditating, and a little extra willpower may be in order. As with many things in life, you can't expect it to feel perfect right from the start. The best way to combat stress is to take action to prevent its effects before it happens. So the work ideally should begin when everything is going well. That way, you will be better prepared when a stress-inducing situation comes along. The meditation on appreciation you will hear later, one for the little ones, one for the older ones, is extremely useful for training the mind. The more regularly you practice them, the easier it will be to deal with stress. Recent studies have shown the benefits of meditation can have on older people who are suffering from the stresses of loneliness, which can contribute to cardiovascular problems and even Alzheimer's disease. While meditation certainly isn't a cure-all for the issues of the elderly, it does have the capacity to provide comfort. In brief, the antidote to anger is to practice compassion and tolerance. The antidote to jealousy is to practice rejoicing in the happiness of others. To prevent and manage stress, practice the meditation on appreciation. 20 minutes of meditation a day and a daily breathing exercise can also be helpful. Strengthening your health. Managing your emotions can affect your health on three levels: by preventing illness, fighting illness if it has already shown up, and helping with recuperation. Studies have shown that in the 2 hours after having a major bout of anger, a person is 5 times more likely to have a heart attack and 3 times more likely to suffer from a stroke. The inability to deal with stress causes our immune system defenses to be weakened, resulting in inflammation and, on the cellular level, accelerated deterioration of chromosomes. John T. Cacioppo, the director of the Center for Cognitive and Social Neuroscience at the University of Chicago, speaks of surges of stress hormones so violent that they damage genes governing the cells of the immune system. A group from the University of California at Davis has shown that 3 months of intensive meditation stimulates the activity of telomerases, enzymes essential for the protection of cells from aging. During meditation, we generate endorphins in the same way we do during athletic activity, thereby providing positive support for our state of mind. In other words, training the mind helps us take care of the body. There is plenty of proof of the connection of meditation and health. Between 1970 and 2012, the number of scientific studies on the effects of Buddhist-inspired meditation went from 10 per year to practically 500, according to data cited in an article by Jon Kabat-Zinn in Change Yourself, Change the World. The results of these studies are particularly significant for the treatment of depression, addiction, and attention deficit disorder, and also pain management. Some of the health benefits of meditation: cardiovascular protection, immune system protection, protection against cellular aging, support during cancer treatment and recuperation, pain management, treatment of the symptoms of addiction and depression, management of attention deficit / hyperactivity disorder, weight management. According to Christophe André, positive emotions can rebalance our parasympathetic nervous system and slow down cellular aging, thus supporting longevity. Being more productive at work. In the past few years, mindfulness practices have made their way into the business world. Every day, companies like Google and Sodexo embark on the adventure of meditation, with employees and bosses alike practicing mindfulness for a few minutes a day. Will meditation become a commercial commodity? A company might launch a meditation program to make employees more efficient and productive in their jobs, but there are other benefits too. Better managed emotions means better communication between employees and with the boss, and conflicts are more easily diffused. These types of shifts can make for a better work atmosphere, one that's based on trust and confidence, with anxiety and work stress reduced all around. It is an experiment well worth trying. Take a break while you are sitting at your desk for 5 or 10 minutes every day. Concentrate on your breath. Come into the present moment. Follow the movement of your belly as it rises and falls with your breath and your mind becomes calm. Bring your thoughts toward loving kindness. Matthew Ricard suggests saying to yourself, May everyone I am looking at now be happy. Everyone can benefit from these types of pauses at work, but a more complete practice at home will help us get the most out of them. The benefits of meditation at work. Makes us more efficient, enables us to concentrate better, fosters creativity, strengthens self-confidence, improves personal relationships, helps avoid burnout, helps us feel good about our work. Working toward a more altruistic society. The meditation programs we see today are typically based on the basic techniques of mind training in Tibetan Buddhism. But at the same time, it is a form of meditation that has neither an ethical nor a spiritual component. Some experts are sounding alarms about this contemporary turn of events. A tradition provides an ethical path as well as a path for transcending the self. Dominique Steiner, an expert in stress management, points out, if everybody comes up with their own recipe, the risk is that many people will end up practicing with the goal of achieving power over themselves and other people. The best way to avoid this outcome is to be sure to include an altruistic motivation in your practice, which we will discuss in the next chapter. These practices will bear fruit not only for ourselves, our children, and our family, but also for the future of our society. Daniel Goleman goes so far as to say that the crucial challenge for this century will be to expand the circle of those we count among us and shrink the numbers we count as them. Three. Which meditation practice to choose? Tibetan Buddhism offers hundreds of meditation practices. It is up to you to choose which ones work best for you. Are you looking solely for the therapeutic aspects of meditation? Would you like to include an altruistic, compassionate motivation? Or are you interested in immersing yourself in the full spiritual path of this tradition? Remember that the meditation techniques shared here are not based on religion, but they can, if you wish, become the starting point for a journey that goes well beyond simple self-development. If you are moved to pursue a spiritual path, such as Buddhism or Hinduism, we recommend that this be done under the tutelage of an authentic spiritual guide, a person who can serve as an inexhaustible source of inspiration. We've drawn the meditative exercises in this book from Why Meditate by Matthieu Ricard and The Restful Mind by His Eminence Gyelwa Dokampa, a young master of Tibetan Buddhism who is quite familiar with the ways of the contemporary world. How to begin? Now that you have learned a bit about meditation and its benefits, it's time to get started. Meditation is not something you do by listening to this audiobook. It's something you have to practice. In this chapter, we will offer suggestions that you can use in your everyday life. We will get you acquainted with four important meditation exercises selected from the books mentioned previously. As a parent who is looking to introduce moments of meditation into your child's life, it is important for you to prepare yourself by not only listening to the exercises, but doing them at least once or twice before sharing them with your child. These same exercises will reappear in Part 2, but in a highly simplified form adapted for young children. With your support, as your child gets older and has gathered more experience with meditation, you can start to introduce the more advanced exercises from this chapter. When you see how thrilled your child is to share this new activity with you, your efforts will be rewarded. What is good for you is also good for your child. Little by little, both you and your child will notice the benefits of a meditation practice. There are several ways of practicing meditation in our busy lives. A short, regular daily meditation is more valuable than an occasional long session. A few minutes a day isn't enough to bring about a real transformation, but it's enough to begin with. You might believe that your mind is so restless that you won't be able to sit still on a cushion without getting impatient. Your mind is filled with a long list of things you have to do, all of them of the very highest importance. Water the plants, update social media, answer phone messages, and so on. But the first order of business should be to pacify your mind, which is why morning might be the best time to meditate. The simplest technique for taming the ceaseless whirling of thoughts in our minds is to do what comes most naturally. Inhale and exhale. By meditating on the breath, your ability to concentrate will gradually increase, and eventually you'll be able to keep it up for 20 minutes, which is the recommended practice time for a beginner. In addition to a formal practice, try getting into the habit of performing your daily tasks mindfully. This means heightening your perceptions while remaining fully relaxed in the present moment. Washing dishes or emptying the dishwasher can be quite calming if you do them with full attention. When you are caught in a traffic jam, it is useless to keep changing lanes and getting yourself worked up by trying to get a few cars ahead. The reality is, it's hopeless. On the other hand, what is within your control is the way you react to the situation. By meditating on the in-breath and the out-breath, you will learn to give yourself a little space and accept the fact that everything might not always go the way you planned it. Exercise. Meditation on the coming and going of the breath, based on the description by Matthieu Ricard. 1. Sit in a comfortable position with your body upright and well-balanced. Here, mindfulness means remaining aware of your breathing without forgetting it or letting yourself be distracted. 2. Breathe calmly and naturally. Concentrate all your attention on the coming and going of the breath. More specifically, focus your attention on the sensation created by the passage of air through your nostrils. Also notice the moment when breathing is suspended between the out-breath and the following in-breath. After that, concentrate again on the point where you feel the breath passing. Then, note the moment when the breath pauses between the in-breath and the out-breath. 3. Continue another cycle of breathing, breath after breath, without tensing up, and without relaxing to the point of becoming sluggish. Let your awareness of the breath be clear and calm. 4. Do not intentionally change the rhythm of your breath. Your breathing will probably slow a little. Allow it to happen naturally. Whether your breath is long or short, simply be aware of the fact that it is long or short. 5. Sooner or later, you will wander into a state of distraction accompanied by many thoughts, or into a slightly sleepy state. Or you might even experience a combination of both, a state of confusion marked by erratic thought associations. Be vigilant. As soon as you notice you have lost your concentration, simply return to the breath without adding feelings of regret or guilt to your distraction. Noticing the distraction already marks the return of your mindfulness. Just come back to the breath, like a butterfly coming back to a flower after having fluttered around here and there for no apparent reason. 6. When thoughts appear, don't try to block them, which isn't possible because they are already there. Just avoid feeding them. Let them pass through the field of your awareness the way a bird passes through the sky without leaving a trace. Another good habit to get into is taking micro pauses in the course of a busy day. Feeling like you never have any extra time is the sign of an agitated mind. If you are experiencing upsetting emotions, short pauses following the breath can help. Take time out for a brief meditation with the phone turned off. Say to yourself, watch your breath. Breathe gently for a few minutes. Finding the time to meditate. As we mentioned earlier, the same discipline that you apply in athletic training or for finger exercises if you are a musician is required in mind training. In all cases, the efforts you make toward acquiring a sense of well-being and balance in your life are well worth it. A few minutes a day is all it takes, and you won't regret having taken them. Patience and perseverance. When you begin your meditation practice, your mind will be full of distractions, and it won't be easy to get it to settle down. Sometimes it will remain agitated for the entire practice. Other obstacles will appear. The phone will ring, the baby will wake up and cry, or your older child will walk in and ask for help with his homework, to say nothing of the pain in your knees. There are a number of ways you might react to these common obstacles. One would be to get irritated and jump to the conclusion that you've failed and have been wasting your time. Another possibility is to change your perspective and look at the obstacles as integral to your experience and stepping stones in your progress. At the beginning, you will need to arm yourself with patience and perseverance, as you would with any new activity. Meditation on the breath with visualization. Here is another meditation based on the breath that has been recommended by His Eminence Gyelwa Dokampa. Meditations and breathing exercises involving specific physical postures are valuable for engaging the body and calming the mind. This practice, which looks like a yoga exercise, is excellent for maintaining health. You can also engage the 7-point posture while doing the meditation on the coming and going of the breath. Exercise. The 7-point posture. 1. Cross-legged or in lotus or half lotus, left leg inside. 2. Straight back, like a stack of coins. 3. Shoulders stretched straight, like the wings of an eagle. 4. Neck slightly bent forward. 5. Eyes open, focused, with gaze lowered to about 3 feet in front of you. 6. Mouth slightly open with the tip of the tongue touching the upper palate. 7. Hands on lap, right palm over left, with thumbs touching. If you have knee problems, you may sit on a low bench or a chair with your back straight and not resting against the back of the chair. Keep your feet parallel and flat on the floor. In the following meditation, you will be asked to visualize the positive aspects of the world, imagining that they enter you on the in-breath in the form of white light. Then on the exhale, you will visualize all that's negative inside you, anger, jealousy, sadness, imagining that they come out of you in the form of black smoke. Beginners can repeat the exercise 3 times, with each repetition starting at the 2nd step. As your practice grows, you can increase the number of repetitions. Exercise. Meditation on the breath. White light and black smoke. 1. Begin with a long exhalation through both nostrils and visualize anger, hatred, negative karma, disappointment, and stress coming out of you in the form of black smoke. 2. Close your left nostril with your finger and inhale deeply through your right nostril. Hold the breath for 2 seconds and visualize all that's positive going into your body in the form of white light. 3. Close your right nostril and exhale negative thoughts through your left nostril in the form of black smoke. 4. Inhale one more time through your left nostril while visualizing positive thoughts in the form of white light. 5. Close your left nostril and exhale negative thoughts through your right nostril in the form of black smoke. 6. Inhale deeply through both nostrils while visualizing positive thoughts in the form of white light. 7. Forcefully exhale negative thoughts through both nostrils in the form of black smoke. Benefits. When you practice this meditation on the breath, you simply bring your mind back to the present moment without desire or expectation. You put your mind at rest. By practicing it every day, you'll find that the feeling of calm it brings lasts longer and longer. Meditation on the breath is not only calming, it is also stimulating, and over time it becomes easier to do. The advantage of breathing meditation is that we can do it anywhere. Engaging the 7-point posture helps mentally center yourself, but isn't absolutely essential in order to benefit from the exercise. Meditation on appreciation. By practicing this contemplative meditation that takes just a few minutes a day, you will begin to explore your mind in depth and develop a more refined perception of yourself. You'll attentively observe what is going on inside you with an opening to overcome anger, forgive yourself, and find a sense of calm and peace of mind. This description of the meditation on appreciation is provided by His Eminence Gyalwa Dokampa. Exercise. Meditation on appreciation. 1. Close your eyes and bring your thoughts into the present moment, reflecting on what is positive in your life right now. Start with your body, then slowly expand the circle to include your family and friends, your job, your community, and the world. When we aren't aware of what we already have, we tend to be dissatisfied in some way, focusing instead on what we think is missing from our life. We often have so much more than we think we do. 2. Start by thinking about your physical health. The simple fact that you are able to see and hear should be appreciated. Next, feel gratitude for having family and friends. We are fortunate to have people who love us unconditionally. Then expand your appreciation toward the world. Good people exist to benefit others because the world exists. 3. All you need for this meditation is a quiet space, either at the beginning or end of the day. It doesn't matter what you are wearing, but comfortable clothes will reflect your comfortable mind. Sit in a chair or somewhere you feel alert and at ease. It doesn't matter where, and there's no need to be attached to a particular place or room. 4. Spend a couple of minutes focusing on your breath. Breathe gently and easily from your belly. Notice the breath. Notice your belly rising and falling. Find a natural pace that's right for you. Contemplate and appreciate without clinging, without feeding attachment. Appreciate your body and whatever degree of health you have. Appreciate the wonderful people in your life who are kind to you and support you. Appreciate what you do, your career, your lifestyle, your community, and beyond. 5. Develop your personal sense of satisfaction. After all, what is happiness other than satisfaction? Go into as much detail as you like. Appreciate anything that comes to mind for what it is, simply and without any expectations or conditions. Benefits. In the words of His Eminence Gyalwa Dokampa, To begin or end the day with appreciation may sound simplistic, but it works. Providing an